Hi there, listener. It's Matthew. You've come looking for an episode of the Children's Book Podcast, and you've found it. Hooray! But you're probably wondering why the name of the podcast has changed. After 8 years of doing the Children's Book Podcast, I began a new career as head of podcasts at A Kids Company About, where I now oversee a podcast network dedicated to producing original content that talks up to kids, centers the things going on in their world, and engages and challenges how they see the world and themselves. All of the episodes of the Children's Book Podcast are still here, but now, if you're subscribed, you'll get new episodes of Worth Noting, a kids podcast about current events, hosted by me. Something for you and the young people in your life to enjoy together. Enjoy this episode, and I hope you'll check out Worth Noting and other podcasts from A Kids Company About. All the Wonders, the Children's Book Podcast, is brought to you today in part by Audible, offering anytime, anywhere listening of your favorite audiobooks with the biggest selection ever, and it's all backed by Amazon. I am currently listening to The Stars Beneath Our Feet by David Barclay Moore, and it's one of those books that I'm seriously listening to every second I have the chance. The book follows Lolly Rajpal, a 12-year-old in Harlem. From the outset of the story, Lolly is struggling with the loss of his big brother to gang-related violence. It's Christmas, but this just isn't the time for celebrating. And yet, as we're pulled through the season, through the neighborhood, through Lolly's time at school, we see the complex strands crisscrossing through Lolly's life, holding it together and yet causing so much tension. Lolly constructs with Legos and he finds himself, his best self, while he's building imagined architecture and cityscapes out of colored bricks. But is a child of this city, and he soon is subject to a gang looking to recruit him. There's so much about Lolly's world that was new to me, experiences that I haven't had, and things I've never had to consider, and so much that drew me back over and over again, so much that was working in me as I listened and continue to listen. I highly recommend you read or listen to The Stars Beneath Our Feet as soon as possible. Audible's offering a one-month free trial to listeners of this podcast. Visit the show notes for this episode at allthewonders.com to start your free trial and support this podcast with the same click of a mouse or tap of a screen. I hope you'll go try it out and see for yourself. Happy listening. Meet Julie Siegel Walters and Brian Biggs, who are not the author and illustrator characters in their new picture book, which was authored and illustrated by them. They swear they're not. Welcome to All the Wonders, the Children's Book Podcast. I'm Matthew Winner. This is episode number 401 of the podcast with Julie Siegel Walters and Brian Biggs. Julie's making her picture book debut with This Is Not a Normal Animal Book, illustrated by Brian. But what's really cool is how the line blurs on the roles of author character and illustrator character when reading this book and finding out about how this book was actually made. Things really started to go to unexpected places in this conversation for me when Julie admits that in her debut, which is told through two voices, the author and the illustrator, she set out to make the illustrator the hero, and the author role, well, not. It's pretty wild what she does and how she engages her readers through these voices, and all alongside some truly awesome and hilarious illustrations, care of Mr. Biggs. Hey, enjoy this conversation. Here's episode number 401 of the podcast with Julie Siegel Walters and Brian Biggs.
Hi,
Welcome to the podcast, Julie. Brian, I'm glad to get to talk to you about tonight.
Which one of us is Julie and which one of us is Brian? I forget.
I'm the one. I'm in charge.
Wait, but are you... The name, I'm not sure which one.
It begins quickly here, doesn't it?
We're going to make the most meta recording ever of book to podcast comparison. Julie, welcome. You want to introduce yourself to the people listening? Tell them who you are.
Thank you. Hi, thank you. I am Julie Siegel-Walters. I am the author of This Is Not a Normal Animal book, which is my first picture book, my debut picture book, coming out on November 7th. I live in Washington, D.C. with my husband and my son, and I'm very happy to be here.
I'm glad you're here. I'm glad that I got to meet you in New Jersey. I'm glad that I got to see this book. And Brian, we had this great moment of Julie was leading a session and was doing a wonderful job talking about different themes in picture books and holding different ones up. And I was The librarian in me was just like, yes, these are amazing books you're holding up, and they're contemporary and wonderful. And then she mentioned that, oh, and I have this book coming out, and here it is. And I got to read it, and it was it was a really wonderful moment to get to read this book. So thank you both for
what
you
did. Thank you. That was special for me as well. I had to cover my face because I was turning so red with joy.
You did a wonderful job.
Aww.
Oh, red with joy.
Yeah.
You know, we've got Brian here. We could cover your face for you if you want. Brian, introduce yourself. You're not debuting. You are quite well established in my library, and I know in many libraries as well. Thanks for being here.
I am happy to be here. I think it's my debut podcast, maybe. My name is Brian Biggs. I live in Philadelphia. This is not my debut. You are correct. It's my, I believe I counted, 63rd book that I've illustrated.
Hey, that's the sixth, congratulations.
Six and a three. I live in Philadelphia with my lovely wife, my dog, who won't get off the couch here. And while we were doing that little intro, my wife was trying to silently egg the dog into going outside before he goes upstairs, but he wouldn't go. And then I have two teenagers as well. And that's the history of my life right there.
Amazing. And somewhere in there, picture books came out of both of you. Wonderful, playful, ridiculous one that I, to be quite honest, don't quite know how to approach because of how much when I've read it, it appears the line is very, very blurred between author and illustrator. So, Julie, why don't you, if you don't mind, introduce this book to us, and then I'm going to jump in and start talking about process and what I see because it really, every time I've read it, which is now... so many that I'm grateful that they gave me a finished copy because the FNG was getting a little messy. It's you've done a really wonderful job, as I said, but I'd love, Julie, since the book will be out when this podcast comes out, I'd love to hear how you are sharing what it is to other people.
Okay. Great question. Well, I think one of the fun things about this book is actually to figure out what it is to each person who reads it, because it has a lot of different elements and there's a lot going on in it. And as people have started to read it in the children's book community, if not in the public, everybody's kind of having a different reaction to what their takeaway is from the book and what the book's about. So for me, I describe the book as it's a metafiction book with a conflict between an author and an illustrator over how to draw the author's choice of animals in the book. So the backdrop of the book is ostensibly the animal classifications, mammals, amphibians, reptile. So that's the backdrop of the book, but the actual story, the actual plot is this conflict and collaboration and ultimate compromise between the author character and the illustrator character. And I'll let Brian talk about how that's played out for us with people thinking it's me and Brian, as opposed to an author and an illustrator. But the author character and the illustrator character have this metafiction conflict and then ultimate compromise. that resolves itself ish. For me, this is kind of a book about trying to have things your way, and not, and then being thwarted in that. And both the author and the illustrator want things their way to follow their vision, and they both kind of have to give up a little bit and compromise there. There's some elements of this that I hope will be conversation points between with teachers, with kids, with parents, with kids about, well, how do you think they did there? Do you think that they could have handled that differently? Do you think they were nice to each other? You know, those kinds of conversations, because it's not a neat, tidy, you know, it doesn't sum up and tie a nice little bow around how it resolves it. You know, the author still kind of sticks it to the illustrator at the end. And so for some people, I think the book is a little bit about animals, because there's some nonfiction back matter that teaches actual animal facts. For some people, it's about conflict and collaboration. For a lot of people, rightfully so, it's a book about the behind the scenes of how a picture book even gets made. You know, how a book is written by an author and drawn by an illustrator. It presumes that there's collaboration and interaction there, when in reality there largely is not. But that's kind of, the book is also a behind the scenes look at the picture book creation process. And then the motivation for the book was also, it kind of a parent-child dynamic a little bit, where the parent, you know, a parent would say, you
Brian.
know, a parent might say,
Hey, I wonder where this is going.
you
There's a
know, you
long
have
way
to
of
do
saying
this
it's a fight.
with a precocious child, where a parent would say, you know, you have to do this thing, and you have to do it. And the child says, I don't want to do it. And the parent says, well, you have to do it because I said so. And the child says, well, how about if I do this other thing instead? And that kind of parent-child power dynamic. In my family now, we've actually adopted one of the lines for the book. When my son isn't doing things, you know, I don't want to brush my teeth, I don't want to get in the shower, and you know, what, or why do I have to, whatever. And we'll say, it, you know, it's a blob because I said so, fish. You know, you have to do it. So I don't know, there's a lot going on in there, so I don't blame you for saying, I don't really know what to do with this.
Brian, what l let me kind of tap into what Julie was saying there too. What did the manuscript look like when you received it, and then from there, how did you determine how to handle your role in it?
I'll step back real quick and say, as many times as Julie and I have talked about this book, this parent-child thing has never come up until tonight.
Nice.
True. It's true.
So, anyways,
But can you see it? Can you see
oh, I see it now. Now that's all I see, Julie.
Well played. Well played.
Oh man. So, this is one of those scripts. This came around the same time as the Mac Barnett book I just did called Noisy Night as well. And both of them were scripts that when you first read them, you're like, what the heck is going on here? And, you know, as an illustrator, I've done a ton of like kind of middle grade and chapter book stuff. Oops. Which is, you know, all that kind of, it's much more descriptive and you're just kind of drawing a picture for a scene. Picture books are so different because you're really kind of interpreting something where you're an equal partner in a way. And it's not just illustrating a scene. And so both of those books were, you know, there was nothing in my head visually as I'm reading them immediately. What I loved was just the concept and the words. You know, this one was one, you know, I hadn't read at the time, you know, Chloe and the Lion and those other meta books where they're talking about the way books are made. And what I liked is just the preposterous idea that the writer and the writer and the artist were somehow working together, you know, which is kind of like even my adult friends who aren't involved in books seem to think. And just the you know, like somehow someone's writing a sentence and then I'm drawing the picture. It reminds me of those Bugs Bunny cartoons
Right.
where, you know, they're erasing, you know, Daffy Duck as he's, you know, and so that was the first thing I thought of was, oh, good, we get to do something like that. And I thought that was really kind of cool. So, you know, the immediate thought was, yeah, I want to do this. And I hadn't paginated it yet, so I hadn't thought about page turns. And that became much more of a difficult task. Once, you know, once I started kind of like putting it down on a grid and saying, all right, this is X number of pages, and how are we going to turn the page between each one? And, you know, I guess there were some, you know, revisions and rewrites and things that had to go in, but it was just going to be fun from the beginning. And I, you know, I didn't know Julian, so I really, you know, there wasn't any sense of the relationship that it was already established or anything like that, like there might be if it was a friend of mine that wrote the book. So I just saw a complete, almost complete freedom here. This was just going to be a fun thing to really get out of my skin and do something else with that I hadn't done before. And that's kind of the way it turned out.
Nice. I think you both hit on that, but it does feel very much like, and this is, I assume, Julie, to your credit of how you wrote the manuscript, and then also Brian to how you interpreted it, but there is a really great blur between where the author stops and where the illustrator picks up. The voices of the author and of the illustrator in the book are really well done, and
Oh,
I
thank
can
you.
hear both of your voices in that, just in the, I think because you've both lived with this book for a while, you're sort of dropping a lot of the lines back and forth, which is wonderful.
Right.
What did the manuscript look like when it was bought by the publisher, Julie?
Okay, so I love this question because this has been this I didn't realize that people weren't going to know that I wrote the words in the book, which I take as high praise, to be
I
honest
mean, I
with
think
you.
pairing with Brian was mentioning about it's very common, I think, for adults to say, I mean, probably a lot of your adult friends, my adult friends have said, when they find out that you write children's books, they're like, oh, who's going to illustrate it for you? Who did you pick to illustrate? There's always like that line too, that it's very clear that people don't understand the industry, and nor should they. They don't have any experience to understand it. So that's
Yeah, why
okay.
would they?
Why would
Exactly.
they? Exactly. But even people in the industry have asked, so what part did you write? And what part did Brian write? And so the manuscript as I sold it didn't it went a little farther into the, if the cat laid an egg, it would be a hen. If the hen did this, it would be a that. If the frog, made honey, it would be a bee. It went farther. So the revision that happened later jumped directly into the revision that happened later jumped directly into the conflict and put the kind of back and forth straight away, where the illustrator was confused immediately, and then the confusion builds into straight up obstinance.
Yes.
At the beginning, it didn't quite start that way. So it was a little later into the manuscript, but it was always still there, that the illustrator breaks in and says, wait a minute, you want me to draw a blobfish? I don't want to draw a blobfish. So that piece was always there. It was always that back and forth, and there it was always written in two voices. This author voice in this book is pretty straight. Like, it's a pretty straight author. It's not a caricature. I have a another it's kind of like a I've written like a sequel to this book, which is with a very different author voice, in that kind of 1950s school marmy, whole grains are Mother Nature's most special gift, that kind of a thing. So it's a very different author voice. This book has a pretty straight author voice and a pretty straight illustrator voice as well, which, coincidentally or not coincidentally, thanks to a wonderful editor selection of illustrator, suits the personalities of
Yeah, that's the funny
the
part about it is that I didn't, there was a few lines that I either added or kind of wrote to fit more my personality, but I mean maybe two. But I remember, I think that was one of
And
the
the
two.
page turn, f to facilitate the page turn, you added the words to help with the turn.
Yeah, like the, oh, come on, you know, that kind of thing. There's one or two. But mainly, I think when I first met Julie, just after we had, you know, I'd signed on to this thing, you know, we had a dinner, I guess we'll say, with, I guess, Ed, Your husband was, Ed was there, Miles was, so it was like a sitting around, but I wanted to know two things. One, having this being a debut, script, how did it's like, it felt like something that came from somebody who's kind of been in the trenches for 20 years, and like sick of the whole process, and I'm going to write a book about it. But then the other thing was that she kind of caught kind of the way I do this in my own head while I'm drawing anyway, which is like, what? You want me to do a what? And it had two very distinct voices already in, and one of them sounded like the way I sound. So it was kind of a surprise. There wasn't a lot that I had to do as far as kind of getting that tone down. It was already there. It was nice.
Do you think the editors at your publishing house, Brian, were like, when they got this manuscript, they were like, "What voice do we hear in Julie's words? You know who this sounds like?" Because it does, it feels natural. It feels really nice. But Julie, I wanted to mention about how I interpreted the text, because I feel like in a really cool way there, we the readers are almost right there with the illustrator in my mind, because your words are really, they're really jarring deliberately from the start too. I mean, if I read, it starts, "This is a cat," and there's an illustration of a cat. If the cat laid an egg, let me have a page turn, it would be a hen. And Brian has illustrated it as a post-it note with a chicken laying an egg, and it says, "A hen. Oh, sorry." So we've seen that fix, and then we turn it. If it the hen hopped on lily pads, it would be a frog. A frog. And it continues that way, just sort of. Maybe I should just read the next page where you, where the author speaks. Yes, it would be a frog, and the illustrator says, "This is so confusing," because it is. And I actually, what I really thought was a smart device in your writing, Julie, is that to get into the fact that we're talking about animal classification, that that's what this thing is when we have different characteristics that certain animals have in common. You gave that line to the illustrator later on, saying, "Well, you need all these kinds of animals, right? Mammal, bird, amphibian, insect, reptile. So you need a fish." So I thought that was really clever to sort of reach a point midway through the story where one of the people that's a stakeholder in the book, whether it be author, illustrator, or reader, is able to have that aha moment of, "Oh, I think I figured out what's going on. Why don't I now try to help us move forward in a way that might make more sense and not be as confusing?" And that's where we have the turn where we go from the illustrator not getting it to the author going, "Oh, this is what we're doing. We are going to we are on this train. This train is moving this direction," which might be why, perhaps, I don't know who is reacting in certain ways, but my guess would be that there's lots of writers responding to this book going, "Oh, you're really playing on the quote unquote leave room for the illustrator thing," because you're very clearly dictating what needs to appear in the book, in that voice of the author.
Well, you've actually hit on a bunch of really cool stuff. So my intention, 100% in this book from the very beginning, is the illustrator is the main character. And I guess I could say there are two main characters, but there aren't. The illustrator is the main character, and the author is kind of the antagonist in a way. And although I've never phrased it that way, but I really like the way that sounds now that I hear myself say
Yeah, you're the
it.
villain. I mean, no, I'm sorry, not you. No, in fact, let me jump in real quick, because Julie cued me into something I didn't take her cue on, which is that the illustrator and the author as characters are not Julie and Brian as author and illustrator. And that's something that the book had long been finished, and this is just a couple of months ago that Julie expressed this concern, because all of a sudden, like, I think a couple of reviews mentioned, Julie and Brian are having it out in the pages of this book. And of course, I saw that as a natural takeaway. Yeah, okay. But I think it was really important to Julie to say, "No, this isn't Julie and Brian. This is the author and the illustrator and their characters in my book." So, in fact, the other night when we did our first presentation at the Tacoma Park Library just north of Washington, we read the book with puppets to make that even clearer. So the puppet I held was the illustrator, and the puppet she held was the author. And so it's funny, because that's totally true. I think that, the kids see the illustrator as the sympathetic character here,
Yeah,
but
definitely.
That's not me, because I'm far from sympathetic.
That's
I
not
mean, if you're
true.
gonna root for somebody, root for Julie, not me here. Right? But at the
Well.
same time, I think the author as a character, and I hadn't thought of the book like that at all until just a couple of months ago. It was really funny.
It's an interesting takeaway that I'm glad to hear you say you kind of sympathize with the illustrator, because that's definitely the case. And in fact, when Brian and I met, and he said, you know, how did you write this book not knowing, you know, you've never done this before? How did that come out? And my question to him was, you know, what made you interested in it when you read it? You know, what was interesting to you? And I said, was one of the things that was interesting to you the fact that you're the main character of the book?
Oh, I'd forgotten about that, but you're totally
because
right.
It's true. It's the illustrator is definitely the sympathetic character here. And you said something else, Matthew, that I wanted to highlight also, which I thought was really interesting, that has completely flown out of my head. It'll come back to me, but yeah, the two voices has been there, that, you know, that's been there from the beginning.
How about, can I ask that turning point? It might've been, you were talking about the turning point. I'm not sure, but that I really thought it was so interesting to go from, again, how intentionally jarring the text is of, if a cat lays an egg, and then if a hen does this, and a frog makes honey, to go from that to
the animals.
Well, I was gonna say, to go from very clearly, you're both on the same page, if you will. One saying I'm confused, and the other one saying this is what's going on, and then despite that confusion, after the illustrator is like, here, oh, it's classifications. Here they are. So we need a fish next, right? Why don't we do sharks? Because sharks are awesome. It is. No, this is the way we're going. I just thought that was such an interesting twist. It's not the natural place to go to make, and maybe that's what makes it so appealing. I think that what you hear about metafiction, in publishing is that it's been done so many times that they're really looking for an interesting hook. And as cliche as that becomes, this book has that. Because it's just doing something that is so unexpected and feels, when I'm looking at it as a writer, when I'm looking at your manuscript, I just keep going like, how did this come out? Because it seems to go against all of my natural inclinations to write that way. So I admire that about you, Julie, that you were able to write in that way. That was really, it was really an interesting thing.
Oh, well, thank you. If I told you how the book came about and the full backstory, you probably wouldn't be impressed.
Let's leave it mysterious and magical.
Yeah.
I will tell you this though, that when you mentioned, I remember the second thing I was going to say, it was when you were talking about the turn to the illustrator mentioning the animal, you know, some of those animal classifications. That came about because I was kind of entertaining myself a little bit with this book, with the manuscript, as a creative exercise during Picture Book Idea Month, the Tara Lazar Picture Book Idea Month that's now been renamed Story Storm, where, you know, picture book authors and illustrators just challenge themselves to come up with an idea and just be fully creative for the month of November. It's now in January, but at the time, for the whole month of November, it was one idea per day. And it could be a title, or it could be a character, or it can be a prompt of some kind, some idea for a story that can be, and the only requirement is that you not self-edit and that you just write everything down. And so this idea came about because I was reading a book to my son at bedtime that had Yiddish words in it. And I started thinking about how much I loved Yiddish because my grandfather used to speak Yiddish and my grandfather taught me to swear in Yiddish. And I just I've always thought that Yiddish and Yiddish proverbs are just brilliant and hilarious. And so that night in my, in my idea notebook, I wrote down Yiddish, you know, write a story with Yiddish because Yiddish is funny, or, you know, something like that. And then I started Googling Yiddish proverbs and found this proverb: if the cat laid an egg, it would be a hen. And the proverb means a lot of things, but among the things it means is, if you can't just wish for something to be different from what it is, because if you wish for something to be different from what it is, it's no longer that thing. It becomes something entirely else. It could also be interpreted to mean you can't just wish for something to be different. You actually have to take action for something to be different. So there's a lot of that proverb in the meaning of the book too. But as I was entertaining myself with it, and if the cat laid an egg, it would be a hen. If the hen hopped on lily pads, it would be a frog. And I just started making this silly list. And then I thought, these animals are boring. Let me put more interesting animals in here. Maybe that'll spice it up a little bit. But there was still no arc, no story, really. And so then I found this very unfortunate looking blobfish back before blobfish were known. And thought, okay, well, this is hilarious. I'll put this blobfish in there because that would be a riot. And then I literally just started writing, you know, what is a blobfish? You want me to, what do you, you know, what the F do you want me to do with a blobfish? And so that became this breaking the wall.
But, and this was before, kind of... I have to point out that this is then before Blobfish won the, what was the international award
the
of the ugliest animal.
Yeah.
It was around that time that there were zero books, zero children's books about blobfish at the time. Because this was 4 years ago. This was November of 2013.
But how many fuzzy slippers were there, Julie?
At the time, there were zero.
She has some lovely slippers in blobfish shape.
But,
amazing.
So, but that night, so I wrote this little... silly little entertain myself thing and I emailed it to my critique partner, to Maria Burrell, my critique partner at the time. And I emailed it to her and said, is this me entertaining myself or is this something I should work on and pursue? And she wrote me back and said, this is metafiction and metafiction's really hot right now. And you have all the animal classifications in there, which as a teacher, would be really interesting for this book in the classroom. And I read her email and I go, I have animal classifications.
Oh, like, you're kidding.
Completely accidental. I had no idea. I think I may have had to Google metafiction even. And it literally just kind of came out that way. I've never, ever been able to replicate a writing experience like that ever in the last 4 years since then. So it isn't all peaches and happy rainbows, you know, for writing and publishing. But this book has been very that organic from the beginning. And, you know, and I think the illustrations definitely show that. Like the
amazing.
Illustrations show a confused illustrator trying to comply, trying to do right by this book, trying to get it right, but just not really understanding what's happening. And it doesn't really make sense. And why are all these very clunky transitions happening in this book. And then the illustrator's just like, you know what, I've had it. And the author all along the way is increasingly more frustrated with this illustrator because the illustrator's not doing what the author wants. And it just kind of, that's what's supposed to happen there. It's supposed to be clunky.
Brian, you're, you know what I mean? Yeah, no, I fully agree that. And that blobfish string of pages is one of the funniest things I've ever read in a children's book. And Brian, I would say even beyond that, your design of this book is seamless. It's just perfect. I've seen many, many books where there are, where there's a character writing or in somehow editing the book itself. And you lay it out so well here. And really, I would say the culmination of your art as well comes in that string of pages with blobfish where we just see you go through all of these different representations, really in a way playing with the idea of, well, if there's ever a kid that has not seen a blobfish, which there are many kids that have not seen a blobfish, you help to build up that tension. And then Julie, the words you've written for that illustrator to say, specifically, and I'll let it land when people read it, but specifically the, oh boy, now I can't think of anything besides that blobfish.
I love that line.
Is so good.
Really? You like that line?
It was so fun to do it out loud the other day in our little performance in front of these kids that, you know, where I get to interrupt, you know, as you're reading your part, Julia, and then I get, oh boy, now you're not going to, you know, just, it was just, for what, a whole year, I guess, I sat there and I read that, I work alone in an old garage. And there's nobody there to tell me to shut up. So I sit there and I read books aloud and I So as I'm like, I've got the camera up on a tripod, I'm photographing all these cut pieces of paper and crayons and different angles and the lighting. And I'm sitting there just, oh boy, you can't get this thing out of here. You kind of have this voice in your head. And so I've always loved that line. I think that's a good line.
It's so
It's
good. And again, the way you treat it to on that page turn, try getting
Thanks.
that image out of your head, is
Oh, I
so
love that
good. It
much.
just
It's
lands.
so good.
Yeah. Oh, it just lands. Anything like that, any book that can get kids to jump back in their seats, whether out of joy or surprise or disgust or the humor of it, is such a powerful and difficult thing, I think, to pull off. And you both just nail it. It's so good.
I love that we got
Thank
to use
you.
that picture of that fish twice. We
Yeah.
got to have it
Yeah.
small and then just bleed it across the whole spread as big as we can get
That
it. And
spread is so perfection.
yeah.
I haven't actually checked. I shouldn't ask you this. I should just check on my own. But is that spread the centerfold in the book? Is it the center?
I think it's near the end.
Oh,
I
I
can't.
think it comes at the two-thirds mark, as any climax should, but
Yeah. The
okay.
centerfold is just about the animal classification page with the
Yeah, I think
shark.
so.
That's right about where it is if I'm looking now.
Think
Okay.
so.
All right.
Nice.
Well, it
Center
should
for
be.
centerfold.
I love that
Well,
spread.
to have all of that go on and then to get the ending where you do bring it back to those animal classifications, and not without interruptions, actually
Right.
had me, but this could be the librarian in me, thinking like, where does Library of Congress classify this book? Because it does work really well for an exploration of animal classifications. It should be in the everybody section so that everybody can access it and whatever. It would get lost in the nonfiction section.
Sure.
But it does, Julie, even if accidentally, it does land really well for a great way to say, well, this is why, this is how scientists classify and why they classify things that way. Whether or not that was a happy accident, it stands as such, and that's a really cool thing.
The back matter, thank you. Thank you. And the back matter was intentional once I
Okay.
realized, oh gosh, it's there. Now I'm going to add in now I'm actually going to say it. It was kind of accidental that each of the animals I had selected satisfied different categories
Yeah.
or fell into different categories. But then once my critique partner pointed that out to me, then I worked that information into the book and created the back matter to draw that out.
But I still got the final voice, the last laugh in the book.
Yes. Yes.
Don't forget that.
No,
I like
I
that
know,
how
but
Brian's
that's
using I. He's using the I
I know,
voice. You're fully owning
I
this.
realized that as I was saying it. I mean, the illustrator got the last laugh, not me.
True. And I think that, and I actually think
Good
that th
old
that has,
illustrator.
as we've read it out loud, when we read this out loud at Politics and Prose and at the library the other night, and then I did a school visit yesterday, the illustrator lines in the back matter are actually some of the funniest lines in the book.
Oh, they're great.
And so yeah, so I that was my husband recommended that. He said, don't do straight back matter, keep the repartee going in the back matter. And I was like, oh, that's a great idea. So
Yeah.
that's when I wrote that. But can I just tell you, this book, it's not finished yet. We're working on it, but there's a teacher's guide that accompanies this book that's gonna I'm trying to keep it under 100 pages, this teacher's guide, because there's all things, there's the science side, there's the language arts and the text structure and all of that. There's also the kind of social emotional learning and compromise and collaboration. So there's a lot of different ways that classrooms could use the book, but I definitely know that we need to help people kind of see that and figure out, well, how could I use this? Where might this fit? Where would this book be appropriate in my classroom? And so I've got at the moment like a 40-page teacher's guide or something that we're trying to cut down to be in the 20s of
I think
pages.
that's a really good thing you're doing, though, offering any time we have those teacher's guides, especially when they're as thoughtful as it sounds like you're describing, where it allows teachers even to not follow the teacher's guide to a T, but rather to be inspired by, well, what did you think about this side of it? Did you think about the social emotional side of it? Did you think about the classification? Did you think about voice or conflict? That's a really powerful thing that you're offering. And so that I'll look forward to seeing that because I think that so often I know how I would use a book. And it's exciting to know that, I mean, that's for me why social media is such a fun thing because I get to see how all my friends interpret the same medium in such a different way.
There's a very patient education consultant named Pam Brunskill who's writing this teacher's guide. We're writing this teacher's guide for me and or with me, I guess. And she's been very, very patient because I keep saying, well, can we add also this? And can we also tell people about that? Nice. She's been a saint.
Oh,
can I ask you a question?
Yeah, go ahead.
You know, one thing I'm noticing that we haven't talked about that I think is actually one of the most profound things about the book. Can we talk about the cover?
I was actually literally going to go there.
Okay, good.
Because as a librarian, I was about to call this out. As a librarian, maybe we're not going to go in the same direction. So let me lead and then catch me if I go a different direction than what you're wanting to share too. You've got a different jacket than you have a cover. Your case cover is different from your jacket. And mm-hmm. and specifically, it's because the title of the book, as it would appear on the case cover, is just Animal Book with Animal a book. Chicken on the cover. And of course, with the proper cover on it, with the jacket on it, this is not a normal animal book. And what I found really hilarious about that, whether or not you are aware of this, is that very, very often those jackets are taken off and they're just, books are just barcoded and put into process into libraries without that. And right. I thought, oh, this is so funny that like, I can name a couple books, but like Beagle, for example, by Dan Santat, that had a fully different case cover. This book will have my children bending the books like backwards by its spine to see what's underneath the jacket of the book.
Yeah.
And
I enjoyed that. I enjoyed how very plain and unassuming the case cover is.
Any chance I can get to do a different case cover, like I've done several picture books now where we've done something sly and underhanded on the case cover. Not many have been big sellers, so they're not, you know, very well known. But this is one that was weird, but because we changed the name of the book. And I thought about the same thing. When my kids were young, we took the covers off. I always kept the covers, but we always took them off. And this is one where I think a lot of kids will know this book as just Animal Book. And in fact, it goes back further. You know, when we had early talked about marketing plans and things, you know, I'd kind of suggested to Simon and Schuster, maybe we should do something where, you know, even in the author bio and the illustrator bio, there's this sort of like battle back and forth or the illustrator wants nothing to do with the marketing plan or, you know, different things like this. And, you know, to Julie's credit, she always kind of, at least a couple of times it ever came up, reeled that in because it made it too, you know, a little bit too, confrontational in ways. But when we got away with the case cover, I was really surprised that they let us do that because of the fact that it literally changes the title of the book. It's not just a different cover like Beagle has. It's a whole different title.
It's a different title. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Except on the spine. The spine.
Except on the spine. Yeah. I did check that as well. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, it's a funny one. That's.
I love the cover more than I can describe. It's just the most perfect book cover ever.
The designer did a nice job. You know, the details of that come from Lucy, the designer at Simon & Schuster.
I was going to say, Lucy Ruth Cummins, yeah.
Yeah, she, the way the cat part, the blue parts are flat, they're kind of, there's a flatness to them. They don't reflect the light the same way the glossy is the rest of the cover. So it really looks like pieces of construction paper stuck on there and the tape is glossier. And the whole thing is just, you know, I mean, I can design it and put it together in Photoshop and send a file. But then when it actually showed up and those details were there, I nearly, you know, fell out of my, lying on the floor, screeching with laughter that we, you know, sometimes in doing kids' books, you feel like you really got away with something. And this is probably the most than any other book I've done. You know, I'm driving home from the studio thinking, oh my God, somebody's going to call me in a week and say, no, we're just kidding. We're really going to do this normal, you know, we're not going to do this, but here the book's about to come out and no one's told me that yet. And I still feel like somehow we got away with murder here. This it's so much fun. I really love that cover.
The jelly. It's the jelly.
Oh, the jelly. Yeah. That was a fun day at the studio too. Make a lot of peanut butter sandwiches that day. So yeah.
I thought the same thing too. And it was fun to see Lucy's name on there. She's been on the show before for One Hungry Lion. and is illustrating. A friend of mine has a picture book coming out, Carter Higgins, that she's illustrating, which is awesome.
Another this is not
This is not a
able. It's
Valentine,
not a
then.
Valentine. Yeah, so
Right.
it's another this is not book.
But those details, to see that, that's a really fun thing as a librarian to get to look at with children as well. So really cool, Brian, to hear that you also reacted that way. I'm sure, Julie, you did as well, to be able to bend the book in the light, to move it that way, and to see that there's different finishes on there, and to know that all of that is intentional, and is just to know that there's a designer behind a book. I guess maybe that is where I was going to go. It really helps for us who are not on the bookmaking side of it to see that I feel like it makes it easier to see that there's more people involved in this when there's embossments in the book, when the what do you call that, when like the words like pop out on the cover, when they're like raised that way, anything like that, this glossiness, that matte finish on different things, all of those things that really sort of plant the book in like our world's rules, but yet you know it's a work, it's a story, but yet it's playing by our rules. It just it adds to that element of storytelling and of taking us somewhere. So yeah, kudos to Lucy for bringing that in too.
Yeah, no, we had a good team. It's I think the a follow-up should be the editor fighting with the art director, arguing with the writer, with the we get the whole gang involved, and then you get on sales and the et cetera. But no, it was a great team. And it really felt like that because everybody had, I'm kind of a control freak when it comes to design, and Lucy handled that perfectly, and then still got to throw in what I think is the cherry on the top, which is that embossing and that glossy thing going on there. I don't know what to call it either. The
It's like spot
coating,
matte. It's like
spot
spot
matte.
matte.
Yeah, that's takes the writer to tell you that, right?
A writer who nerds out hard about picture books, which is a good thing.
Apparently, yeah.
Julie, is that also what you do? We have that same idea. Is that also what you wanted to share with the cover?
Sorry.
Is that
Oh
all
no, I
you?
just wanted to praise it. I
Oh
just wanted to
yeah, go
praise it
ahead.
'cause I think the only thing I wanted to say about the cover is, we can talk about the story and the we could talk about what's going on in the book all day long, but the truth of the matter is, if the cover doesn't sell that, if the cover doesn't say, "Hey, pick me up because I've got a lot going on here," then nobody's going to see what's inside in this crazy little picture of a blobfish.
Right.
That none of that's going to be there. And this cover, I think, tells the entire story. And I just think that the cover tells the entire story of what's happening about the superimposition of the different animals getting all mixed up with the spot mat. And obviously there's an author and an illustrator who are having problems with each other because of the in charge thinks they're in charge thing, and and the different case. If from the very beginning when you see this picture, when you see the cover, if you're paying attention, you know what this book is about. And that, there's definitely the design elements in there that are brilliant, 100%. But it was, it's Brian's art. Like this cover is the ball
Absolutely.
game,
Absolutely. I love a good cover too, that you want to face out. At a library, at a bookstore, anywhere like that, it's so hard. We have such limited space that we can't face out all the books. But a really good cover. One, this is a book that not only do I want to face out, but I think my media helpers, my fifth graders that come in to put books on display too. It's one that is an easy choice, which is cool.
Oh, that's great.
Yay. Yay.
Yay. I mean, just how bizarre is it to look at people that haven't seen it yet, we'll see it in the show notes, but to see a chicken with like a torn sheet of paper on over its butt with a tail and over its head with a cat head. It's great. And also side by side, I didn't know that the manuscripts were so close. Brian, I mentioned when I saw Julie in New Jersey, to bring it back to your other book, I mentioned how exceptional I thought Noisy Night was in your design, because again, in that way that you were conceiving the art, this art works so well to It could be one of those, who does it? Is it Frank Viva does it? That it can be like one long continuous picture that just folds out and folds out and folds out. You
Yeah.
design that art in that book to be able to be stacked on
Goes
top of
up,
each other. It just goes up
right?
and you have in this story, if I'd say it briefly, of a multi-story building with the characters on each floor being bothered by the noise coming from above them. You've got a great way of carrying in the page that came before by looking a little bit at a trim of the ceiling from the floor below and the what we're leading into with a larger trim of what's above. And I thought that design was so beautiful. So really both of these books, you really show off your skill as a designer as well as an illustrator, Brian. Really
Thanks.
big kudos for that.
I have to give another art director credit on that one too, though. Ann Diebel was really who, I mean, that was a real, I don't remember which one of us, she's, at Roaring Brook / Macmillan, and I'm not sure which one of us really came up with that, but there was definitely her voice saying, you got to show a little bit from the page before as you turn the page. And then, it's another one of those collaborative things that it wouldn't have happened. It doesn't happen in a vacuum. It's definitely, that's a, to me, a real joy of all of this is getting to work. It's like it's I write some of my own books and I illustrate for other writers, and no matter whether you're writing them and illustrating them yourself or working with another writer, just the fact that you're working with these creative people and it's always a collaboration. It's not like making a film maybe where you've got credits rolling at the end, but I do love working with really smart people who often have better ideas than I do.
Well, it's cool to hear that
Makes it
consistency
easy.
of the
Thanks.
team of the team helping
Yeah,
and
thanks.
yeah, that's cool. Well, listen, it's been really wonderful talking to you both. Thank you so much for sharing this book with me. It was a real treat. Julie,
Thank you.
as you
Thank
know,
you.
live and in real time, it was quite a treat for me to read this
Yeah.
book.
That moment will stick with me for a long, long
Our
time.
moment where I was like, oh my God, Brian Biggs illustrated your debut.
Yeah.
It's a big
Aw,
deal. It's a
guys.
very big deal. It's a very big deal, Brian. You're a big deal, man. And this is the right
And he
book
nailed
for it.
it.
Nailed it. All right, so let's end with bring it back to your readers, to the people you've gotten to meet already with this book, and to the ones that will meet you through this book in the future. Julie, I'm going to start with you. I'll see a library full of children tomorrow morning. Is there a message that I can bring those students from you?
Yes, I actually thought about this a lot today. And I'm taking a page out of my son's book to give my answer here because I've kind of learned this from my son. So I'm hoping that other kids will have the opportunity to learn this from my son as well. My message to your library full of kids is you be you. Because you being happy with who you are will always make you happier than if you try to be someone else to fit in or to please someone else. So you be you is my message.
Well said. Okay, this is really weird because I'm in the car tonight with my 16-year-old, and I said, hey, I'm going to do this podcast tonight, and this is going to get asked. What should I say? And my 16-year-old says, well, does it have to do with books or is it just in life in general? I said, well, I was thinking books, but what life in general? And she says, my message would be basically, you be you, don't worry about other people, think of yourself first, put yourself first without being self-aggrandizing. But you've got to take care of yourself first here and just be who you are because nobody else matters when it comes down to it. So I'm really glad, Julie, that you answered that answer so I can give me the book answer that I wanted to say in the first place. I was torn, but I'm not anymore.
So Brian,
Great miles.
what message would you
Yeah,
kind of share from my studio?
I thought about it all day too, and mine is just what I thought at the beginning. Just look around that library. Look at all those free books you get to read. Pick them up and read until your head explodes.
Awesome.
This podcast is recorded and produced by me, Matthew Winner, in my library studio in Ellicott City, Maryland. You can subscribe to the podcast and access the archive of over 350 episodes at All the Wonders, a home for readers to discover new books and to experience the stories they love in wondrous ways. Go beyond the book at allthewonders.com and check out other podcasts from All the Wonders, including the Picture Booking Podcast with Nick Patton, a semi-weekly podcast about picture books and the people who make them, and Books Between, a podcast hosted by Karina Allen, helping to connect kids ages 8 to 12 and their parents, teachers, and librarians with the books they'll love. Our theme music is by Emily Arrow. All views and opinions expressed on the show are those of the individuals, myself included, and do not reflect any ideas or viewpoints of the publishers of the books referenced. Listeners, if this episode connected with you, I'd love to hear it. Leave a comment on allthewonders.com or rate the podcast on iTunes or Stitcher through stars or reviews. Sharing the podcast with friends through Facebook, Twitter, word of mouth, or any other means helps reach more listeners, which leads to more content and more amazing guests. And that's a very good thing indeed. Coming up on the podcast, Jared Reck shares a short history of The Girl Next Door, live from the Baltimore Book Fest. See you then, and thanks for listening. We know you value what you put in front of your kids, especially when it comes to screens and podcasts. That's why we're excited to share a new podcast from our friends at Sleepiest, creating bedtime stories to help your kids fall asleep fast.
Hello, Abby here. If you've got children and find bedtime's a struggle, I'd like to tell you about Coco Sleep, a children's story podcast designed to make bedtime a dream. Coco Sleep turns a chaotic bedtime into cozy bonding time. The stories are delivered in a pace that gently slows. Rumour has it that no one's ever heard an ending. So search Coco Sleep on your favourite podcast app and let's make bedtime a dream. That's K-O-K-O Sleep, and I'll see you there.